This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 12th, 2019. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, the Is It Just Me commentary, headlines from the Pacific Rim and Pacific Northwest, the Big Deal feature, the BC government releases reports on money laundering in real estate and luxury cars, and Huawei's Meng Wanzhou makes another court appearance before she moves into her Shaughnessy mansion. Let's call it White Collar Crime Week in British Columbia. And the Breaker will award a virtual Nanaimo Bar to those who made a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or did things get worse for Justin Trudeau last week? Paul Manley of the Green Party was the surprise winner of the Nanaimo Ladysmith by-election, with the Conservative candidate the runner-up, and the NDP and Liberals coming third and fourth. The NDP did not get its vote out to find a successor for Sheila Malcolmson, now the NDP MLA, after replacing Leonard Krogh, who quit the BC NDP to become the mayor. The party, led by Jagmeet Singh, who parachuted in from Brampton to Burnaby, was represented by Bob Chamberlain, who parachuted into Nanaimo from North Vancouver. Chamberlain went to high school in Nanaimo, but has otherwise been away from the hub city for several decades. His other problem was his donation to the Trudeau re-election campaign last November to attend a cocktail party Cash for Access fundraiser in West Vancouver. Chamberlain and his partner, Michelle Louis, put a combined $2,800 into Liberal Party coffers. He didn't respond when the Breaker wanted to find out last fall, but in March he claimed he gave the money to the Liberals because he was there to support his friend, West Vancouver Sunshine Coast Liberal MP, Pam Goldsmith-Jones. Chamberlain, the vice president of the Union of BC Indian Chiefs, could have supported Goldsmith-Jones on her birthday or at Christmas time, and no reporter would have asked why. Instead, it probably cost him some votes. Speaking of Pam Goldsmith-Jones, in the wake of the by-election, she announced that she was one and done. She will not seek a second term this October. Goldsmith-Jones is the fourth female Liberal MP to grow disenchanted with self-proclaimed feminist Trudeau, because it's 2019. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, Zhuang Pingwei reports, Chinese truck driver collapses steel bridge and dumps 100-ton load of concrete pipes into river. A trucker in eastern Zhejiang province collapsed a steel bridge by crossing it with a load weighing 50 times the bridge's capacity. The driver, surnamed Zhang, said he missed the 2-ton load warning sign when he tried to take dozens of concrete pipes to a construction site on May 9th. CanCan News reported. He was not familiar with the area and used the bridge suggested by his digital map. When the laden truck, weighing about 100 tons, was halfway across, the structure gave way, pitching the vehicle and its cargo into the water below. The driver managed to escape. In the Malaysia Star Online, U.S. charges Joe Low, ex-Fugees rapper, over funding in 2012 election. The United States Justice Department announced on May 10th that it had charged former Fugees rapper Pras Michelle and wealthy Malaysian businessman Joe Low for conspiring to steer illegal foreign campaign funds into the 2012 presidential election. According to the unsealed indictment, between June 2012 and November 2012, Low directed the transfer of approximately $21.6 million from foreign entities and accounts to Michelle to be funneled into the U.S. election while disguising it as legitimate campaign contributions. The indictment did not reveal the identity of the presidential candidate. Under federal election law, it is a crime for foreign nationals to make political contributions in U.S., federal, state, or local elections. Michelle, who is a U.S. citizen, was a well-known avid supporter of former Democratic President Barack Obama and donated to political action committees that supported Obama. In ABC News Australia, Outback search reveals almost $1 million allegedly hidden in car's fuel tank. Police have allegedly found almost $1 million in cash hidden in a driver's fuel tank in the Outback New South Wales town of Broken Hill. Police said the driver, 52-year-old West Australian James Wally, appeared nervous, triggering a search of the car. The officers allegedly found a methamphetamine pipe in Mr. Wally's luggage. A further search of the fuel storage tank in the car, which has a capacity of 400 liters, caused police to seize the vehicle and conduct a more intense search. The tank was only three-quarters full. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. From KGMI Radio, hammockers fall off cliff at Larrabee State Park. Multiple agencies responded when two people fell off a 30 to 40 foot cliff May 8th at Larrabee State Park. Whatcom Emergency Services posted on its Facebook, one person had life-threatening injuries while the other had none life-threatening injuries. Reports show the people fell when their hammock broke, sending them over the cliff. Both were taken by boat to Peace Health St. Joseph Medical Center. In the Oregonian, Amy Green reports, police can't rummage through your curbside garbage without a warrant, Oregon Supreme Court says. The Oregon Supreme Court on May 9th disagreed with more than 50 years of state case law by ruling that Oregonians retain a privacy interest in the garbage they leave on the curb for pickup, and that means police can't simply rummage through it, even after a truck hauls it away. Quote, in our view, most Oregonians would consider their garbage to be private and deem it highly improper for others. Curious neighbors, ex-spouses, employers, opponents in a lawsuit, journalists and government officials, to name a few, to take away their garbage bin and scrutinize its contents, Justice Lynn Nakamoto wrote in her 6-1 majority opinion. The case stemmed from the arrest of two people arrested in 2014 for dealing meth. Police in Lebanon, Oregon found evidence of drug activity in their trash and got a warrant to search their home. Czech News reports, damaged whale-watching vessel beached on U.S. island en route to Sydney for repairs. Eagle Wing Tours says the 60-foot catamaran called Forever Wild hit the rock near Smith Island on May 9th with some 45 passengers on board. As a precautionary measure, the company says the boat's captain beached the vessel on the shore and waited for help to arrive. U.S. and Canadian Coast Guard vessels, along with Washington Fish and Wildlife Police, civilian boaters, and air support responded. And last week in the Breaker.News, these headlines. You can be Meng Wanzhou's neighbor for a price. Housing in BC, 7.5% more expensive because of money laundering. And BC luxury car exports to China exploded by more than 4,000% since 2013, says Money Laundering Report. Read the stories behind those headlines in the Breaker.News. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. It was White Collar Crime Week in British Columbia last week. Maybe the first full week of May should always be White Collar Crime Week in British Columbia. On May 7th, Attorney General David Eby released the portion of Peter German's new report on money laundering in luxury vehicles. German, the former head of the RCMP in Western Canada, is a money laundering expert and professor at the University of British Columbia. He found that BC has a thriving underground market for vehicle exports to China. In 2013, less than 100 cars were sent overseas. But 5 years later, that figure ballooned to more than 4,400.
The review found car dealers in BC freely reporting individuals bringing bags of money or orchestrating multiple small international wire transfers to different accounts in order to buy luxury vehicles. Individuals with high-level criminal records are alleged to be principals in several used luxury car dealerships in the province. The report also uncovered a complicated luxury vehicle export scheme involving hundreds of straw buyers acting on behalf of unregulated small-scale luxury vehicle exporters. a gray market that the authors say has expanded dramatically since 2013 and is extremely likely to be facilitating trade-based money laundering. This issue of gray market exports, according to the authors, is further complicated by the apparent export of stolen luxury cars through our ports as well. Our ports must be crowded with containers containing luxury vehicles. Dr. German notes that our ports do not have a dedicated police presence. This report is disturbing confirmation that money laundering in BC is a problem that certainly goes beyond our casinos. In the luxury car market, there is no financial reporting of large cash purchases, no oversight of international bank wire transfers, and no apparent investigation or enforcement. It's all a recipe for exactly what's happened here. Vancouver becoming North America's luxury car capital generally, and perhaps since 2013, claiming North America's luxury car export capital title as well.
Money laundering expert, Peter German.
My favorite line is that organized criminals don't drive smart cars. It goes with the lifestyle. What you tend to see, particularly the gangster element of organized crime, there's an interest in luxury items of all sorts, whether it is vehicles, it's boats, it's jewelry, and so forth. So there's just an appeal to have that type of flashy adornment, whatever it might be, and they can afford it, so they do. The other side of it, however, is that luxury vehicles today are worth so much money. It's not like a $10,000 used car. We're talking like a $300,000 used car. So you can actually very effectively launder a lot of money through a car, through lease payments, through purchases, through reselling. And then you can also get involved in the business of reselling. So there are a lot of different opportunities for money laundering, and that's what we were looking at.
Huawei Chief Financial Officer Meng Wanzhou returned to the law courts in Vancouver for another hearing in the BC Supreme Court. Associate Chief Justice Heather Holmes set September 23rd to begin a hearing on evidence disclosure, but she did not say when the actual extradition hearing would begin for Meng. Meng is charged with fraud in the United States for allegedly deceiving banks in order to skirt trade sanctions with Iran, but she is living in Vancouver on bail. Her four-man team of lawyers want to use the evidence they have gathered and more that they hope to obtain to make a case that Meng's arrest was a breach of process. They say the arrest at Vancouver International Airport last December 1st was unconstitutional. They also say President Donald Trump was offside when he suggested that Meng could become a bargaining chip for a trade deal between the U.S. and China. Holmes agreed to vary Meng's bail to let Meng move from her $5 million luxury Dunbar house to her $13.3 million luxury mansion on O'Shaughnessy Street near the United States consul residence. Huawei wants to build Canada's 5G telecommunications network, but critics of Huawei say the company's loyalty is to the Chinese Communist Party and it is helping advance China's social credit mass surveillance system. Meng's lawyers did not speak outside the court, but Huawei Canada's public relations executive Benjamin Howes did, in an event that was coordinated by the company's public relations contractor, Hill & Knowlton.
From the beginning, Huawei has expressed extreme confidence in Ms. Meng's innocence. We have maintained that her U.S.-ordered arrest was an unlawful abuse of process, one guided by political considerations and tactics, not by the rule of law. More key evidence regarding this case remains in the hands of the RCMP and the CBSA. Ms. Meng will apply to the court asking to disclose more evidence on this matter.
On May 9th, David Eby and Finance Minister Carol James released the rest of Peter German's Dirty Money Report and a separate report on money laundering in BC's real estate market from former bureaucrat Maureen Maloney. Maloney estimated that $7.4 billion was laundered in BC last year, with $5 billion of that in real estate. Her recommendation in a nutshell? More agencies, regulatory improvements, new tools, better information, more investigation, enhanced coordination, all lead to less money laundering. Finance Minister Carol James.
While British Columbians are struggling to find a place to call home, the old government left behind a real estate sector that made it easy for criminal organizations to launder money and to drive up the price of housing for everyone. Not only did the previous government stand by while housing prices skyrocketed, we now know that a portion of those housing prices are also driven up by the dirty money that they failed to tackle. Our real estate market should be used for housing people, not for laundering the proceeds of crime. And that's why we asked our expert panel to review our rules and regulations and to offer concrete actions that we can take to close the loopholes in our real estate and our financial sector. Now, I have to say, the amount of money being laundered in BC is more than anyone predicted. Conservatively, $7.4 billion was laundered in our province in last year alone. It's estimated that $5 billion was laundered through real estate transactions. The panel estimates that money laundering is responsible for increasing BC real estate prices by about 5%. And remember, that's an average across the province, so certainly in areas where you would see more money laundering activity and higher prices of housing, you would have seen a higher escalation. It's very clear that money laundering hurts people, it hurts our communities, and it hurts our economy.
Maloney's report said the government's beneficial ownership registry of real estate must be publicly available with low or no fees to search. In an interview with David Eby, I asked him whether the NDP government would commit to making the registry free to search for the public and for the media. I also reminded him that Peter German found major flaws and gaps in the existing Land Title and Survey Authority's database. Some property owners self-described themselves as fun employed, domestic diva, and even launderer.
This registry, Bob, along with the corporate registry, BC assessment data, and land title data generally, are all data sets that would be incredibly useful to researchers, journalists, and others to connect the dots, and also police, including around the world, who might be looking for people who they believe might have ended up in British Columbia with ill-gotten gains. For example, in Dr. German's report, there was a piece of property identified that it's allegedly connected to an apparent loan fraud in India that defrauded a bank apparently of about $90 million. And the proceeds may have ended up in a property on the Gulf Islands. So, you know, Indian police could potentially use a registry like this to identify that kind of thing if it was free. It's more difficult to comb through registries, obviously, if it's expensive. You know, a journalist like you, even a journalist at a large publication, just doesn't have the kind of resources to do that. A lot of the work that I did on this early on with Andy Yan depended on my free access to land title data as an MLA. And the records I provided to Transparency International Canada around the 100 most expensive properties in Vancouver also depended on that. So I really understand and empathize the importance of that. That will be part of the discussion as we set up the registry, what, if any, charge there should be. The registry will be public, and people will be able to access the data. And so no decisions have been made yet about how that will work. It was unanimous between Maureen Maloney's group and Peter German's group that this was an unacceptable scenario. I mean, if you just wanted to know how many mortgages Scotiabank had registered in the title registry, there were 20 different spellings of Scotiabank. So there was just no way to pull that together. A modern database has drop-down menus and ensures that the spelling and the input is as accurate as it can be. And the question about the point of the occupation category, given that people can really fill in whatever they want, is a valid one. So he's made some very strong recommendations, as has Maureen Maloney's group, about the importance of the accuracy of the data and the input of the data going into the title registry. And this is something that we can really address with the new beneficial ownership registry, is we can ensure that the information going in is into a modern database and is standardized text and so on. And also, we do have proposed in the bill that's in front of the legislature right now, very significant penalties for providing inaccurate information, and that this is information that can potentially be checked by Revenue Canada and others against social insurance numbers and so on in the hottest markets reported as a result of the speculation tax reporting that people have done, and for which I'm very grateful that people are participating in that process.
So now the big task is to decide as cabinet about public inquiry.
So my expectation is that it's dependent on cabinet, obviously, but my expectation and hope that we'll have an answer for British Columbians next week. Cabinet meets on Wednesdays. I know this is a very important decision for many British Columbians, and there's a lot of people who want us to either to make a decision one way or another and move on. And so certainly my colleagues understand that very clearly, as do I.
if not a public inquiry or possibly in concert with a public inquiry, what about setting up in British Columbia a Quebec or New York style anti-corruption department, or even look at the Brazil model, the Operation Car Wash prosecution team? They were actually recognized at the Allard Awards at UBC in 2017 as an example of how to deal with this problem.
Well, I was at that award ceremony for Operation Car Wash, and it was certainly very inspirational, the work that that team did. So we're currently sitting down with RTMP, municipal forces, and others around the design of an enforcement body. We're absolutely looking at Quebec as a potential model. We're looking at other international models of how to structure this to make it as effective as possible. And I hope that we will have information to share about that with British Columbia soon, because the big missing piece in all of this has been enforcement, and that's where we obviously have to go.
Now, one thing that Peter German did pinpoint, of course, in the chapter on luxury cars, was the lack of a dedicated ports police compared to the 150 or so officers down in Seattle at their ports and airports. We don't have any here, haven't had any since the 1990s because of moves the Chrétien government made to shut down the ports police when David Anderson was the Minister of Department of Fisheries and Oceans. Is that something that you'll also talk to federal authorities about, talk to the federal Liberal government about?
The news about the lack of police enforcement at the federal level continues to amaze British Columbians, as it should. The absence of port police when Seattle has, you know, 130 at their ports, and a dedicated police force, and the reliance on the local municipal police to prioritize port policing when they're dealing with 911 calls and so on, is obviously not a model that is working effectively, given apparently the number of stolen luxury cars that are being exported through our ports right now, among many other things, I'm sure. And with the fentanyl crisis and everything else, it's hard to imagine that we're not putting a focus on what's coming in and going out of our ports through a dedicated police team. So that's obviously an issue, as is the overall enforcement issue, and so we are definitely having conversations with our federal colleagues about that.
That was David Eby, the Attorney General of British Columbia. I reached out to Christy Clark, who was the BC Liberal Premier from 2011 to 2017, for her reaction on the money laundering reports. Her assistant at the Bennett Jones Law Firm, where she is a senior advisor, said Ms. Clark was not available.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
No!
Sunny ways, my friends, sunny ways.
What we have right now is a system in place put in by the Harper government that has resulted in tremendous conflict and tremendous amounts of court cases, as people don't trust government to get things right. The reality is, we know that we have to do a better job of responding to investors' concerns about the clarity and the time.
I, Justin P.J. Trudeau.
Sunny ways, my friends, sunny ways.
The virtual Nanaimo Bar, brought to you by Spruce Hill Contracting. Every week, we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Nicola Redpath and the Prince George Animal Rescue Society for raising $14,000 to save a mare named Maggie from a horse meat auction in Quesnel. The money came from a group called 100 Heroes, who donate $100 to charities of their choice. Nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar? Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting. Custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for May 12th, 2019. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on May 12th in 2008, an earthquake in China's Sichuan province, measuring 8 on the Richter scale, 80 kilometers west of Chengdu, it flattened villages and towns. 90,000 people were killed or deemed missing, including 5,300 children who were in schools when the quake hit. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.